Sunward Sky, Episode 2.1, Adrift. The lights in the hallway sat somewhere between tastefully ambient and too dark to see, a quirk of miscommunication between a lighting specialist and an architect. The building was near brand new, and yet the corridor loomed quiescent over any and all activity within. Usually a pair of women's heels would clatter and echo through a place such as this, but the carpet masked Alyssa's steps, turning them into a series of muted thuds. A door slammed open, then shut again, and a second pair of shoes, heavier than hers, thunked dully after her. Alyssa. Male. Anxious. Angry. Alyssa ignored the man, and quickened her stride. The man broke into a light jog, closing the gap between the two of them despite Alyssa making a second increase in speed down the corridor. As the man reached her, she rounded on him. I don't want to hear it, okay? You can't speak to people like that. They're the ones who funded your research. They can cut you off, he said. In fact, I'd be more surprised if they didn't at this point. I don't care. Don't be impetuous, the man started, before Alyssa cut him off again. Impetuous? What am I, a child? You're a mewling sycophant if you're not going to stand up to what they're saying in there, she gestured wildly down the hall. Keep your fucking voice down, he said. These are the biggest investors we've had in the last 15 years at this company, and I'd appreciate it very much if you didn't scream them at them down the corridor, he sighed. Or the conference room, for that matter. Alyssa's eyes looked as though they could have burned holes in the man's face. Don, we've developed something that could solve the issue facing the contemporary world, a drug that potentially halts the onset of space palsy. Don looked at her, impassive. And? Alyssa gesticulated wildly at him, throwing her hands in the air. And? Fucking and? For 30 years, we've been building a series of stopgaps for a dying world. I'm about to go get my reflective parasol out of my locker so I can walk outside without my skin roasting. The water filtration systems we've developed in the last 10 years are nothing short of miraculous. And let's face it, they'd better be, because of the sheer amount of micropollutants and nasty shit in the water have all but killed all the edible marine life we've ever had. We need ventilation fans everywhere in this fucking place, otherwise the particulates in the air would gather to such a level that we'd not be able to breathe in here without caking our lungs in horrible shit. The planet is dying, Don. We're killing it. And you and I have got something that could help, if not the planet, then at least help us get away from it. And they aren't going to run trials. And you're pandering to their bullshit. She turned and started walking away again. Don said something, but his voice came out flat and bland, incoherent and repetitive. The voice quacked and blared and blared and repeated. The man seemed very far away, and Alyssa tried to turn, but she was stopped. Don was gone, but the blaring continued. A crisp echo not deadened by the carpet or the carefully placed walls. A metallic edge. Alarming. It was an alarm. Alyssa opened her eyes to find herself in the shattered control room of the Sunward Sky. Blood was pooling and billowing next to her head in some semblance of a low-gravity environment. The gimbal couch was bent at an awkward angle and crushed to within an inch of its life. Impacts at such high speeds were noted in its purview, and it had been stretched to its absolute limits. Alyssa's arm, that had broken on launch, was throbbing but didn't appear to be broken again, and she was bleeding slowly from a gash on her forehead that was thankfully unscathed aside from that. The alarm blared loudly around her, and the only display left intact on the bridge showed red compartments suffering from oxygen breaches on the ship, where the impact from the satellite or just random detritus had punched straight through the hull as it decelerated faster than anyone could have designed it for. Alyssa lurched painfully upward from the couch and found the acceleration of the ship was driving her into one corner. She looked out the window and saw the Earth careening from one point to the other. The Sunward Sky was caught in a queer inertial spin and lurching like a maimed whale around its usually solid central axis. Alyssa climbed from the seat and stepped off onto the ground, sliding down the seemingly tilted floor and into a corner some meters from the barely functional display. Meg, Nicola, and Mitchell were all still out cold, and she tried to see which of them were still breathing as she pulled herself up to the console. The ship was breached. As she looked at the display, the true extent of the damage was striking her. one of the spaceship's three wings was just gone, and the rest of the spacecraft was a mess. Red codes in Anglo and Mando glyphs appeared everywhere, flashing gold in syncopated time with the alarm system. The emergency lighting seemed miraculously unscathed, but ship-wide communications were broken, and three of the four oxygen tanks and recycler systems had suffered catastrophic failures. The fact that any supplementary systems were running at all was nothing short of astonishing to Alyssa, but she had to push the state of the ship out of her mind to try and deal with the immediacy of the moment. "I have to get that alarm turned off," she thought, and tapped the display in a vague hope that she could find a settings menu or similar to make the screeching clacks and silence itself. "Then I need to stop this fucking spinning." The lurching was regular but not controlled. She was constantly being pulled one way or another. She realized she'd have to try to rouse one of the nav experts. She climbed a wall that had once been the floor of the bridge, trying her best to slip her fingernails into the scant cracks that the grippy flooring offered. The other three couches were arrayed above her, and she'd pull herself up them one by one to try to rouse the deck crew. She got to Nicola first. She appeared mostly unhurt, and Alyssa shook her, gently at first, and then with more urgency. Nothing. Alyssa watched the chest of the young flight officer, trying to watch for signs of breathing. Her heart sank. She couldn't see anything. But then she noticed a shallow intake, a slight expansion of the flight suit. She was alive, but just barely. Alyssa turned away and climbed up to the next chair. Mitchell was dead. At some point during the impact, something had hit him. Well, not hit him, passed through him. The object, whatever it had been, had gone straight through his sternum and left a bloody hole that punched straight through the floor that Alyssa had been climbing up. It was only a glob of thick, dark red blood filling the void in his chest that prevented Alyssa from staring straight through the man into the decks below. She shuddered. She hadn't even known the man, but his pallid face sat in her mind's eye even as she turned away. It was such an ignominious way to die, she thought. A stray item, gone ballistic in extreme deceleration and punching a hole through you a million miles from anyone you knew. His face was pallid and pale and utterly at ease. He would have no more work to do. He wouldn't have to find a way out of here. He was already out. Despite herself, Alyssa felt a little envious of the dead man. At least his troubles were over. She lurched away, scrambling haphazardly up the floor to the final couch. The alarm still blared in the background, and the room lurched sickeningly in an off-kilter rhythm as the ship careened recklessly through space. Alyssa found herself wondering how long it would be before they hit atmosphere. Would they burn up? Would she lose consciousness on the way down? Would she feel the impact as she'd felt the last one, only this time with the full crushing force of gravity on her as the rest of the sunward sky crumpled its significant weight straight onto her frame? Would it even matter? She felt very tired. Clinging onto the edges of an air grate with her fingernails, she lay her head onto the flooring on the side. The room seemed far away, suddenly, and she didn't care if she made it to Meg or not. She stopped wondering about Project Blackout. She stopped wondering if she'd make it home, whether the medicine would work, whether anything mattered at all. It all seemed so pointless now, in a way. She thought of all the people she'd seen die, or hurt, or maimed, or otherwise since she'd been on the Sunward Sky. She was a researcher. Why did she have to see this? "You know why," a small voice in her head said. Her voice, though it seemed small and distant. Meg's crash couch was a few scant feet from Alyssa, but seemed like miles away. The cacophony of the siren went dull. "That's interesting. Tone's all quiet now," Alyssa thought. It was probably fine. They probably toned it down because the ship was just fixing itself. The cold metal grating of the floor was warm and inviting and smooth, and she felt her cheek press warmly down into it. One of her eyes turned scarlet as a low-gravity globule of blood pouring from her temple grew large enough that it sank into her open eye. The world was a blur of the red of blood and the crisp, meaningless grey sheen on the floor. Before long, both of them faded to black. The coolness of the cloth surprised her. A sharp sting of alcohol and a coarse, damp weave of fiber was wiped over her temple as she regained consciousness. The next of her senses to recover was her smell, with the acrid stench of an ethanol pervading her waking mind. Alyssa? The voice was distant but rushing closer like a train in a tunnel. Alyssa, can you hear me? Alyssa opened her eyes and the cloth immediately went into the left one, wiping away the blood and burning her pupil with the alcohol solution. She yelped and tried to turn her head away, but a wiry set of hands held her as they continued to clear her up. Alyssa wanted to scream but found her throat hoarse and voice almost non-existent. She moved her hands up to feel her assailant, and when she heard her, "Settle down, you're all right," she stopped panicking. Meg. It was Meg. Alyssa would have cried if she could have. The text she'd been trying to get to had woken up of her own accord and gone to the effort to rouse her, taking the time despite the alarm. The alarm was gone. The ship was silent again. "How did you..." "Turn off the alarm," Meg said. "It's an override switch. Notice we're still lurching about everywhere?" The gravity did indeed still have the drunken lilt it had before. "I turned off the alarm, but we still have the problem. We're in a degrading orbit, and we have no control over the ship. I need to get to the attitude thrusters working again, but they're fucked. I need your help. How are you feeling?" Alyssa didn't know how to answer that. She looked at the woman. Her visage was still a blur in a vignette of blood red. But Meg was obviously in far better shape than Alyssa was right now. She was moving about with ease and proficiency, pushing with her legs like a rock climber in order to make her way into different parts of the bridge. She opened a cabinet and pulled out an ampoule of some kind. Then, holding it in her teeth, pushed back across to where Alyssa lay against one wall and held it out to her. "Drink this. And while you're at it," she pulled a bandage from her pocket, "put this on your head." Alyssa tore off the safety cap from the ampoule and took a swig. It was a saline water solution and it tasted awful, but she drank it all the same, grimacing as she did so. After that, she tore open the bandage and pressed the adhesive plaster onto her head. "What do you need?" she asked. Meg looked up from the console she'd started tapping away at. "Right. To control this ship, I need to be able to get the attitude thrusters on each wing. One of the wings is just... freaking gone. So I need to switch two of them around. Normally, I could do it from here, but some ballistic must have gone through the comms. I need you to go manually switch them for me." In the next couple of minutes, Meg explained what Alyssa would be looking for in the cabinet and how to reverse the thrusters to get the ship back on course. "Where are they?" Alyssa finally asked, when she had a good idea of what she'd be doing. "Aft, near the rear airlock for the satellite maintenance hatch." "Isa," Alyssa thought. She'd been trapped down there by Clark when he'd gone postal just before he'd killed Captain Sharma. If she was going to go to the rear maintenance hatch, she'd be able to get her out of the airlock and help her out. She turned to head out of the bridge. As she opened the bulkhead door, there was a soft sound from the other woman, just above a whisper. "Alyssa," Meg said, "don't let anyone see you. You don't know who's blackout." Alyssa nodded and headed out the door. The hallway, once dimly but thoroughly lit, and clean and clear at all times even when surrounded by people, was a hellscape. Perhaps one in every five lights was working and had not been shattered into a thousand pieces that now danced gaily along the floor, reflecting the gloom of the remaining luminaires and casting kaleidoscopic fractals across the walls. The sound of venting oxygen came from beyond an automatically closed bulkhead. The room had been exposed to the vacuum of space and hadn't quite expelled all its gases yet. Alyssa had to divert around via a service corridor to get by it. Again, the ship was nearly empty, but this time it rang with the hollow creep of the dead. There was no quiet, contemplative silence of a shift off, nor was there the bustle of a shift on. Instead, a pall lay over the space. The void and absence screamed silently. Alyssa crept further and further down the corridor, jumping with every creak and pop that the injured spacecraft made, wondering if she was being followed by anyone from the death cult she'd discovered aboard the ship in the days before the crash. Healy had done well, really. He'd known there was no chance of directly accessing and resolving the virus in the communications codebase before the Sunward Sky was due to rendezvous with the satellite, so he'd changed the altitude so that instead of floating by and pulling up alongside the satellite, the ship had crashed into it at full speed. And to stop any communique getting through at all, he'd simply turned off all external comms, with only wired, analog, in-ship communications left on to warn the people of the incoming disaster. It had been the best thing for a bad situation, Alyssa thought as she staggered down the hallway aft. She was feeling a lot stronger after the vial of electrolyte liquid she'd had, but getting to the other end of the ship was still a big task. She pushed one arm against what used to be the floor and planted her feet on either side of the corner that was roughly where her center of gravity fell. She reached the aft prep room, where she'd had conversations with so many of the people who had turned out to be co-conspirators in this mess, and leaned into the door, thudding her shoulder against it to get it open. After a couple of hits, she burst through and could see the cabinet that Meg had described her in the corner. She could also see the airlock that held Isa captive. Her eyes were drawn to the small porthole, hoping to see the dark face of the young girl who had been led into so much danger by Alyssa. Not yet, she thought. She had to get the thrusters working, otherwise the whole ship would go down, and saving people's lives would be completely moot. She pulled herself into the cabinet and flung it open. There were a large row of toggle switches, in a series of rows with inscriptions on them. They were the main bearings of each of the thrusters in relation to the centre of the sunward sky. They were switched back and forth along the rows, with red and green lights, as well as some that had no lights at all. Wing 3 had no lights on at all. One third of this ship is just gone. Alyssa could barely get to grips with the enormity of it. Concentrating, she found the series of thrusters that Meg had told her about. She flipped a few of them, and the lights switched from red to green. She breathed out, and then looked for the final two. They were both on the edge of the cabinet, and bent at a queer angle. The indicator LED for both was red. She flipped them. Both lights went dead. Bile rose in Alyssa's throat. Would that mean it was broken? Would Meg be able to get the ship righted? Again? Or would they slowly pick up speed, hurtling down to their doom on whatever part of the Earth that they were unlucky enough to land on? Or hit? Nobody was coming to help them. Nobody even knew they needed help. Just as Alyssa was starting to despair, the first light flickered green. Her heart leapt. She watched intently, willing the other one to follow suit, and after a few seconds it did. She could have screamed for joy, but instead she turned and scrambled to the airlock. The ship lurched into life as Alyssa ran to the airlock, and the world turned around her as some semblance of normality began to return. The floor became the floor again, though the gravity was weaker than before, and the ship swayed like an old sloop in the stiff breeze. The airlock was cycled for entry, and Alyssa pulled the door open and rushed inside, then stopped. Isa was in a suit, but even without seeing what it was that had happened, it was obvious that the young girl was dead. The legs snapped out at all the wrong angles, and the sharp edge of a compound fracture could be seen in the spacesuit where the shin bone had punctured her skin. She was crumpled and broken and collapsed in a corner, and her nose and face were pressed against the helmet. No frost or fog was visible on the inside. She was gone. Alyssa collapsed on the ground next to her, and even as Meg continued to right the ship and get it into some semblance of normal flight, Alyssa wept as she held the lifeless body of the young girl.